Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
ACAST recommends.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.
Hello, and welcome to Blizzard Watch. We watch Blizzard because, well, that's the name of the site. Really, we have no choice. Otherwise, it would just be a really strange thing to be doing. I'm Matt Rossi. I'm the host. And with me this week are two fantastic, literally fantastic, they've been exposed to cosmic rays, hosts. First up, she writes just about everything for the site, Anne Stickney. Anne, what power would you get if you were exposed to cosmic rays?
Boy, I don't know. I'm hoping for laser vision. I've still got my hopes pinned on eventual laser vision.
I gotta tell you, I think if I haven't gotten laser vision yet, you don't have much chance.
I know.
I mean, they've been shooting me in the eyes pretty intensely.
I go in for like a second zapping in December, so I'm hoping maybe that'll kick it in and I'll become an X-Men, because that's what this was all for.
See, I was under the impression you were gonna go for Medusa from the Inhumans.
No.
Do you remember her?
Yeah, I do, but I was hoping more like, you know, shoot the laser beams out of the eyes. Cyclops, but not lame.
I like Cyclops, so I'm hurt.
Okay, well, you be hurt then. You should introduce Alex.
No, that's fine. Alex is just going to complain about his lack of powers anyway. I honestly think Alex would get the Rocky Grim, you know, the thing body. That's what would happen.
Yeah,
with
that's what I was going to say, but it's really unfortunate because I already am that. But then if like, oh, it's superpower, you're the same as always. Like, oh.
Aw.
Could I not also fly?
I guess he can jump. I don't know. The Hulk jumps places.
That's true. Because I don't have a car, so the ability to fly would actually help a lot.
Yeah,
the Hulk can get places real fast because he does that whole jumping, smash things around. I mean, yes, he leaves a trail of destruction in his wake, but at the same time.
See, I'd pay a lot of money to see Alex go leaping through the sky and come crashing down, leaving a crater, and then jump again on his way to the supermarket.
Because if I can't afford a car, I cannot afford the expenses for that kind of collateral damage. Can you imagine the lawsuits?
Dude,
he descended from the sky and destroyed my car. Like, well, I descended from the sky because I can't afford a car. I'm sorry. We're in the same situation now. Deal with it.
So if anyway. Alex can't have car, nobody can have car.
Very vaguely tangentially related to that, but we're going to talk about top stories, I guess, because I wanted to mention this one because it kind of came out of nowhere. But Overwatch's Halloween Terror event is live right now. And I don't recall any real news that that was going to happen until like last week when people started noticing stuff on the Taiwanese site.
Well, there was that whole console leak where consoles listed it like a week
in the store. Yeah.
Yeah. In the store, the Overwatch store for consoles, it had the big like splash screen, like buy holiday packs. And it went down, like they took it down a few hours later, but
it was up long enough for people to go, oh, hey, a thing. I'm going to screenshot this and plaster it all over the internet.
Yeah. I don't really like the skins this time around. The Mercy
what?
One. What? Like, the Mercy one is adorable, but the rest of them are like, whatever.
Dude, the Reinhardt one is great.
The Reinhardt one is like Mr. Freeze, and he's cool. And then there's also like, it looks like 76 decided to take a page. He's like, fine. Reaper's going to be goth and you all think he's cool? Fine, I'll go to Hot Topic. I'll get some face paint. I'll make myself up. And he looks just really lame, and it's great.
I think the way I'll rephrase it is I don't think they're all bad. It's that the only one that I think I would put in a lot of effort to get is the Mercy skin. Okay. If I got the others, cool, but the Mercy one is the one I want. As opposed to like Summer Games, there's a few of them. We're like, yep, I want Tracer, and I want this one, and I want Zarya. But this one, I'm like, yeah, I want that Mercy skin. The rest of them, I could take it or leave it.
See, I like the Anna and Reaper ones quite a lot. I think they're really cool looking.
Yeah, the Ghoul and the Pumpkin King skin. And I really like Hanzo's skin because it's very, like, his tattoo has even changed. He's like a demon type thing. And then you've got...
I gotta say, though, for all the effort they put into Roadhog and Junkrat, they're like the least interesting to me.
I love their skins.
They're the poster boys. I know, but it's just like... I don't know. I don't know what it is.
And, I love Symmetra, their skins.
Symmetra, they just gave her different socks.
Symmetra's like generic vampire.
Like, Symmetra, put on these socks with bats on it. Okay,
No. She's also got, if you like zoom in and take a closer look at the skin, she's really pale and she's got the red eyes. She's supposed to be a vampire, but like, it's not really obvious that that's what she's supposed, it's like, she was the one that was invited to the Halloween party last minute and was like, ooh, what can I do? Well, I have these bat socks hanging around. I'll put those on. And
I want to know, how did they not give Soldier 76 a pumpkin head?
See, you keep going on about this.
Yeah, how do you have a character named Jack and you don't give him pumpkin stuff?
I don't know what to tell you, man.
It doesn't make sense.
I got to say this much, though. I also thought Farrah's one simultaneously looked really cool and yet was kind of generic.
Yeah, that's
like, well, she had the zombie skin. I thought it was pretty neat.
That's the problem is that the details are so small and like unobtrusive that you won't notice them while you're playing Overwatch. Like, Farrah is up in the sky. When she's wearing her normal skin versus like her Thunderbird skin, like you can tell from a distance that they're different. It's just like if she's using this one and she's in the sky, she's just gonna kind of look a little purple.
Yeah, I also gonna say I don't like the Seven Soldiers and Cynic ones for a different reason that Alex doesn't like it. I didn't like it because I could not tell who it was. Like, I'm sitting there for like 5 minutes going, who is that? Who's the red pale dude?
It's I think Soldier that's just because you don't play Overwatch much.
Yeah, he's I was going to say, his stance 76. Made him immediately identifiable
he's
to me.
Still, but... He still has the same silhouette. Like, this skin doesn't change his silhouette at all.
It's Now, yeah, keep in mind that it's not the silhouette, it's not the visor silhouette, but if you've got the Origin skin, the Captain Morrison skin, it's really obvious who he is.
Well, it's like the, Commando 76 or whatever, where he wears, like, camo and he doesn't have his visor. He just has, like, camo face paint or whatever.
He was the one that I had a hard time with. Everybody else I knew who it was immediately, but even Farrah and Symmetra, but I didn't, I was looking at him going, who is that? Is that Lucio? No, that's not Lucio. That doesn't make any sense. Lucio doesn't look anything like that. Who is that?
And like Anna's is cool. Like, I do like the pumpkin face, but like I said, it doesn't change her enough to make me want to get it, as opposed to like the Mercy skin, which is a total witch costume with a witch hat. Like, it's different.
See, Mercy's skin actually looks like something you'd wear to Halloween. The rest of them look like they possibly turned into monsters for real. Mercy just looks like she's having a good time at a Halloween
party. Yeah, and that's kind of what I expected these to be. Like, they were Halloween costumes as opposed to, oh, everybody's a little ashy and gray because they're dead. It seems like kind of a cop-out. Just like, oh, they're a little ashy.
See, Mercy knew about the Halloween party in advance. Like, maybe it's even her party. She's putting it together. So she paid extra, you know, close attention to her costume. Oh, and then Symmetra was like one of the last people to get an invite.
See, if straight I recall, up, I just think that Mercy has a Halloween costume ready at all times.
Well, here's the thing.
Probably. No, I have the witch costume. Why? Oh, no reason.
In one of the videos, I don't remember which one, maybe Anna's, there's like a photograph of Mercy with Torbjorn.
No, that's in Recall.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's like from a Halloween party, and Mercy is wearing the witch costume.
That's why I was kind of bummed, because like in that postcard, Torbjorn is there and he's got like a Viking skin. So I was hoping we'd get that, but we did not. It was sad. I wanted Viking Torbjorn really bad.
The Mercy skin, pretty awesome.
Yeah, but the Mercy skin is great. And I was also hoping that maybe we'd get something with Winston too, because, you know.
See, I don't know.
He dressed honestly, up as King Kong.
Yeah, dressed up as King Kong or something.
The best Winston costume would be just wearing a sheet with eyes cut in it.
Yeah, make him a ghost.
I'm a ghost, Winston. What? You're still walking around like that. Well, that's how I walk. What do you want?
That would be amazing, actually, if they had just made, like, here, let's just put a sheet on Winston.
And he's got, like, peanut butter. He's got a jar of peanut butter on the outside of the thing. And he's, like, trying to get, he's like, oh, I can't eat this.
I didn't look at Bastion's skin very closely. Maybe there's details I missed, but didn't like they wood. Just, like, paint him purple?
No, he's a tombstone.
He's a tombstone.
He's a tombstone. If you look real close, his chest plate says R.I.P. on it.
Yeah, but he's like, just, it's just his regular skin painted purple with Rip on the front.
No, no. It's like he's stone. He's actual like gravestones put together. He looks really cool if you look at him up close. And then Ganymede is like a little raven. It's pretty neat. I loved his. Anyway, so yeah, the skins are in there. There are new voice.
Talk about the new mode, shouldn't we? The new brawl?
Well, yeah, I was getting to that. But there's, like, new skins, there's new voice emotes, there's new sprays. I think there's new a little bit of everything in there. And you get them through Halloween loot boxes, which work almost the same way as the Summer Games loot boxes, with one important exception. With the Summer Games thing, a thing that really irritated a lot of people was that all of the unique skins for the Summer Games, you couldn't buy them with currency. You had to get them from the loot box or nothing, right?
Yeah.
They made it so that you can actually purchase the Halloween skins with credits.
Thank God.
Yes.
Because,
now, the ones, the really cool ones that are in the brawl, okay, so the Junkrat, Roadhog, Mercy, and Reaper skins, those are 3,000 credits apiece. They are not cheap. But
I think that's fine.
Yeah, but the other ones, all of the other ones, I think they're like around 750 or something like that. So it's not, I mean, people have been squirreling away credits for how long anyway, so hey guys, now you can spend them.
Yeah, and I watch a couple Overwatch streamers, and it was, you know, it was this combination of, well, I can't buy them with credits, that's stupid, and I have all these credits from playing, but if all these events you're not gonna be able to buy anything with credits, what good are the credits that I have?
Because what am I supposed to use these for? Yeah,
so you know, if everything was like the Summer Games, you just keep getting credits and credits and credits, but they're not adding anything you can spend them on, so what's the point? But if you can use them this time around, that's awesome.
No, I feel like they heard that feedback loud and clear, and that's why you can actually like purchase the skins now, which is great. Anyway, so you earn loot boxes by doing things your usual way around. It's the same way that it worked in the Summer Games. All of the regular loot boxes have been replaced with these Halloween ones, and there's a new brawl. And we did the new brawl, and we streamed it, and I'm in the middle of uploading the thing and getting it put up on YouTube, but it's amazing. It's a 4-player co-op brawl, and you could choose from Hanzo, Anna, 76, and McCree. And the four of them are investigating the mad Dr. Junkenstein's castle, and you have to like defend the castle from these things that are coming to attack it. So it's like a co-op mode with a siege that's going on, and you're kind of defending the gates and things like that. And it's super fun. It's so
fun.
Wait a minute.
I got to ask one thing.
Mm-hmm.
McCree is one of the four.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get a Halloween costume.
No, he didn't.
McCree is that jerk who shows up at a Halloween party with a costume.
Well, I mean, he's a cowboy.
He's always a cowboy.
Yeah, but he can claim he's not, I guess. But yeah, it's weird that they would include somebody who didn't get a skin in the event.
Especially when they gave skins to, like, you know, Bastion and you know, Pharah and Symmetra. I mean, oh, that's just so weird. That's weird. That's weird.
Bastion would probably be ridiculous in, like, a wave-based co-op mode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I guess it's a balance thing, but it is still weird that they would include a hero that didn't get a skin. I was trying to think about what they could give McCree as a skin that would be awesome, other than making him yet another zombie.
I think they should make him a vampire hunter.
Make him a pirate.
Oh, dude, yeah, have him shoot stakes.
Yeah, or he could be like Alucard from Hellsing.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Why don't they do that?
Put him in like Vala's outfit from Diablo and Heroes of the Storm, including the corset.
Yeah, okay. I'm down with it. Sure.
I would be all for that, and so would like
a lot of people.
hundreds of fan artists are on that like right now, the second you mentioned it.
I feel the need to draw McCree in a corset. I don't, whatever. There's already being fanfic written about this.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
And do we want to go into the Sombra leaks at all?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we could talk about him. I mean, I don't know. Well, I don't know. You talk about it, Alex.
Sombra leaked. As far as we know, there's no confirmation that it's legit, but the art looks legit.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like it's an Overwatch style. It looks like an Overwatch character. It seems right. So, I guess. I think people have gotten so fed up with the Sombra ARG that when the leaks finally happened, everybody's like, oh, thank God. We put so much effort into this alternate reality game that's not going anywhere. So when they finally see a picture, they're like, good, we got something. Finally, we got something. A lot of comments on our site were like, oh, she looks like a cliche cyberpunk hacker girl. It's like, you know, that's what she is, right? That's the character. She's a cyberpunk hacker girl, and she looks great.
Yeah, that's pretty much what she is. So, I mean, it suits her and everything. I'm interested in seeing what her actual backstory is, because we had like all kinds of theories flying around about who she was or what were her origins and that kind of thing. So I want to see like the definitive story surrounding that. Was just a leak. So like I said, it's not confirmed or anything like that, but it looked pretty legit.
If the leaks are accurate, she is a former Muertos gang member who has recently joined Talon. So she's definitely a bad guy, if that's accurate. But we will see.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Think she looks really cool, though. Like, she looks awesome.
She looks really cool. And if you look at the website, amomentincrime.com, that right now is currently sitting at 89.2585%. So, yeah, this is all building up to a BlizzCon reveal. I'm sure we're going to see this at BlizzCon.
I think people figured it out. And if the countdown continues at the same rate, it's like it'll hit 100% on the 17th of this month or something.
Really?
So if they're revealing her at 100%, that's before BlizzCon. It's like the way this whole thing went down, it really seems to have like killed much of the hype for her.
For all but those that are like the most dedicated to this. And some of these people are what I would call arguably over-dedicated because they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, Kotaku posted about it too. Like, it's been going on since this thing started, but Kotaku made a big post rounding it all up today about how people are so like overzealous about this. They are hacking into other players' accounts thinking, oh, maybe this is connected somehow.
Yeah, that's like, not connected, you guys. Don't do that. That's just a thing you should not do ever.
I use hacking as like the shortened version of trying to explain the entire situation, but it's a lot more social engineering. They're getting in contact with like Blizzard support and tricking them into handing over the passwords or giving access to these accounts, just because like they have the word or name Sombra in their account name. So if you were somebody who was like Sombra 6654 or whatever as your Battle.net name, these people want into your account because they think you have something to do with it.
They think that you have something to do with this reveal, and they need to like get into your account to find a clue.
No, you don't understand. I liked Vampire the Masquerade. That's all that was.
And there was that thing really early on where, was it in one of the comics? Was it like the Soldier comic or the Soldier like cinematic where the artists used like a blurry screenshot as like a background?
I want to say that was one of the Anna things, actually. There was like a blurry screenshot in the background, and when you cleared the blur, there was an email address there.
Because it was like they just went to Google image search and found somebody's screenshot of the WoW login screen.
Yeah. So people started trying to contact that email address thinking that that was something. It's not.
It was just a screenshot that they decided to grab off Google. It was completely irrelevant. But people were like, oh, this has something to do with Sombra. Let's get access to this random person's email address. Blizzard really does not seem to know how to run an alternate reality game, and it's disappointing a lot of people, I think.
Well, I think that they're still like playing with it and learning how to do it, because this is not something that's in their usual wheelhouse. Like, this is not something that they do a lot of. This is not something that they've ever really done.
It seems like there's really some fundamentals to it, though, that you just that seem kind of obvious. Like, you need to reward people as they make their way through it. Like, you need to trickle out information. And people go through these puzzles in order for there to be a reward. Like, at the end, you get something. But they haven't gotten anything. It's just a countdown timer to when Blizzard was going to release stuff anyway. And there was no, like, oh, here's a little information. Here's some concept art. You unlocked this. There was none of that. It was just go through this obscure stuff. Be rewarded with a countdown timer to when we were going to tell you everything anyway.
I think they need to put somebody on that if that's something that they want to continue pursuing, because obviously the interest is there.
Yeah.
Like, people are interested in doing this kind of thing, and people really latched onto it and they thought it was really cool. It's just that the follow through wasn't there.
Yeah, it's like Blizzard got caught up with the fun and started doing it without realizing what they were doing. Or if they were actually planning to do an ARG from the beginning, they didn't plan it very well.
Either that, or maybe somebody, maybe we all just collectively missed a really big clue that would have revealed the whole thing. And Blizzard was like, come on, guys, somebody has to get it eventually.
Well, I mean, that's kind of a fundamental part of ARGs, too. Like, if your target audience, who is fanatic and is participating, is having fun, if they get stuck... If they've been stuck for, like, weeks, you nudge them in the right direction. You know, you give them a little more to work with. You don't spoil it, but if they are genuinely stuck, you help them. Like, you can't... Their ability to solve your puzzle is part of your hype. Like, that's part of the marketing. People have to be able to solve it. So if they actually get stuck, if you don't help them, you've blown your hype. And Blizzard just kind of let it get to this point where people are staring at a timer.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it's something... where they could legitimately do something with this if they wanted to, but they need to actually dedicate themselves to that and maybe get, you know, a small team working actively on that instead of, oh, we're just going to throw something in this video for funsies. Let's see if they figure it out. You know, that kind of thing.
And like,
it's something they should take advantage of, though. Because I mean, like I said,
Valve has done some really amazing ones.
Yeah.
What's the company that made Halo? I can't remember this.
I don't know. I want to talk about Legion, though.
All right, whatever. But other game companies have done really good ones, and that Blizzard let this one fall so flat is really disappointing.
Okay. It's like the developer Q&A this Friday, I want to mention. For Legion.
That's happening.
It's the reason I want to talk about it is because I want to know more stuff about patch 7.1, because that's, at this point, we've been told we're getting a lot of things in patch 7.1. We've been told we're going to get more world quests. We've been told they're going to advance the storyline in Suramar. We've been told they're going to get the Karazhan five-man mega dungeon thing. I know you hate mega dungeon. I'm sorry. But we've been told we're going to get the Trials of Valor raid, which is going to cap off the Stormheim storyline. So I'm interested in seeing exactly what they're going to talk about this Friday.
They are taking questions. Ian Hazzikostas is going to be there. So it's going to be him. And all he's going to be talking about is 7.1. Like, all of the questions that they're taking, are they want them focused on patch 7.1.
Yeah,
7.1 has seemed pretty low-key so far, despite all the content in it, but I think I'm okay with that.
Well, I'd rather that it be a good patch than I get told how great it's going to be for months and months, and then it isn't good. But one of the things I'm really interested in is how they're going to advance the Suramar storyline, because we've been told that it's going to advance Suramar. One of the rumors, this is a rumor, this is not confirmed, nobody at Blizzard has said anything about this, this is purely a rumor, but one of the rumors we've heard is that it's going to finally, we're going to finally see the Horde and Alliance doing something.
Well, that a lot of that quest line is accessible, and that has been in places. Pretty much all of the main players in it are the various elf women, which is pretty awesome.
Okay, well, you don't need to spoil it any further than that, because I haven't looked into it at all, Alex.
What's what we exist to do? We're called Blizzard Watch, for God's sake.
I'm not watching that right now because I want it to be a surprise.
It's elf ladies doing elfish stuff, and it seems pretty awesome.
Elf things is great. I am all for more elf things. I'm glad
this is elf stuff all the time.
Yeah, this is the expansion of elf stuff, and I am totally down for all of the elf stuff they want to throw at us. So,
well, I actually race changed. Well, in race change, I actually leveled up a new Night Elf warrior just to have a Night Elf for this expansion.
Yeah, I race changed my priest from human to Night Elf for that reason.
Yeah. In terms of Suramar, one of the things that this isn't going to be a spoiler for anything, but one of the things I'm noticing that
Other zones have not had this ability because they start off as leveling zones first and foremost. Since Suramar starts off as a 110 zone, it really does feel like it's almost the best unfolding part of the expansion we've had, because it keeps, you keep getting more stuff to do as you go through it.
It evolves. I love it.
And one of the things I want, I really want them to keep this in mind going forward in future expansions. And I actually hope that when they do the next expansion, that the leveling zones have this ability built into them as well. Because it would be nice. Like, I actually really like Stormheim. I think it's a beautiful zone, but I really only go back there when it's an emissary day. Like, I don't have any reason to go back there otherwise. Is it an emissary day? Or are they dropping, is there really good loot? Or, like, do I really need resources? That's the case with most of the zones, like Val'Shirah, or I go to Azuna more often because I kind of like Azuna. I kind of have a soft spot for it. But in general, like, and High Mountain I never go to unless it's an emissary week. Like, I avoid High Mountain.
It's funny. I think our tastes in zones are opposing, but I don't think that's a surprise.
No, it's not. My problem with High Mountain is simply that I don't like that it is so multi-level, that it is very easy to not be able to get directly to a place that seems to be right next to another place.
The flight paths in High Mountain are pretty good, though. Like, if you need to go to the upper tier, you go to, like, Witchwood, or if it's on, like, the lower tier, you go to High Mountain or
Skyhorn.
But
a lot of times I can't tell, like, it looks like it's right next to Skyhorn, but it isn't. It's actually close to the water, and you can't get there from Skyhorn. But Skyhorn's the closest flight point, but nope, you shouldn't have gone there. You should have gone here instead and then run down the coast. That kind of stuff happens all the time in High Mountain, and I don't like it. So I honestly think that Suramar is the best example of a zone that, even when it has different terrain and different features, it unfolds in such a way that I can get to all of them. I know where they are. I've learned the zone in a way that I never did for High Mountain. High Mountain, I never learned it. I just got through it as fast as possible and I moved on.
Yeah.
But Suramar teaches you, okay, Fel Soulhold is like this. Scenario, the Crimson Thicket's like this. This place is like this. So you know where they are and you know how to get to them.
Yeah, in that sense, I'm kind of... I think I'll be sad after 7.1 because is Suramar's story ending? And if it is, you know, do we get more stories after that? Because Suramar has been like the 110 focus. And if we don't have another zone doing that kind of stuff, like, that really awesome element will kind of be gone for the rest of the expansion.
So
I definitely don't think it's done.
Here's my weird observations, right? Because I've been playing Legion, obviously, right along with the rest of you for a while now. Because of the level balancing, right, where you can go to any zone at any level and everything kind of scales to you, because of that, it feels like the only thing that's really splitting one zone from another is how everything has its own, like, story, like, overarching storyline, but more importantly, the scenery. Like, as Azuna looks way different from High Mountain, so that separates them as a zone, right? But other than that, it feels like it could all be, like, the island is just one big zone, and we happen to be progressing through it wherever.
Yeah.
Suramar feels like a smaller version of that, because there are sections of Suramar that are really visually distinct from other sections.
Yeah, like, and we were talking about it a little bit in our pre-show, but, like, how, like, certain... Like, there's an area of Suramar that's very much Stormheim, and there's an area of Suramar that's very much Val'Shirah. And you kind of get that aesthetically, too.
It's like a miniaturized version of the entirety,
like,
of the Broken Isles in
Azuna,
one section.
Azuna, Val'Shirah, and High Mountain, and Stormheim, they all look distinct from each other. But there are portions of Suramar where it borders those zones where you can see Suramar is part of this grander area.
Right.
Suramar kind of brings the whole expansion together.
So I'm just kind of curious, though, like, if this is how it's feeling right now. And Suramar feels really good when you're leveling through it. It feels great because, like you said, the story is evolving as you move along and everything else is kind of evolving with you. I'm wondering if this is, like, an approach that they should take for later expansions where, you know, zones aren't really divided by story arcs or anything like that, where it's just a continually evolving experience.
I don't know if you could do it on the entire expansion. That I would, maybe we could, maybe you couldn't. But one of the things I like about, for instance, one of the things I like about Val'Shirah to High Mountain when I go to them is that there is an actual physical continuity between Val'Shirah and High Mountain. Like, Val'Shirah is the lowlands and High Mountain is High Mountain. It's the mountainous area above it.
Yeah.
And there's places in between that are, you know, very druidic and very much, it's like the two societies kind of agreed this place is sacred. And Azuna, like when you go to Azuna and you're looking up, like from the, there's that winery, mm-hmm. and across from the vineyards, there's that's where Valcheri is. It's literally just across that strait. And you can see like it, there's a beach area, like a lowlandy beach area where the water comes in that both areas share. That it's not exactly like it's the same on the Valshara side as it is on the Azuna side. And it forms a really natural boundary. And it's also like its own little place where there's like some quests there and some mobs there. I like that element. So it's in a way the entire Broken Isles feels like Suramar. It's kind of the opposite of what you just said. Like the entire Broken Isles is like a big version of Suramar at the same time that Suramar is a microcosm of the Broken Isles. There's kind of an,
it just works really well together, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It just feels like the lines are like, there's definitely those places. And I was kind of going to mention how there's certain world quests in Valshara where instead I fly to High Mountain and like ride down. So there, yeah, you're right that those areas exist, but it still feels like the like border is harder. Like, mm-hmm. where Azuna and Valshara split. Like, there's that river that cuts it right in half, where it's like, you cross this river, you're in a different zone. And there's still shared spaces, but it seems like Suramar, they actually kind of blend into each other without those border lines.
What's really interesting is that Suramar's, the place where Suramar blends into Azuna is literally the lay ruins of Zarkenar or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
It's right there. Like, if you keep going, you will be in Suramar. Mm-hmm. And it's, that's why the structure is so infested with you know, Nightfallen, because this is where else would they go? Of course they're gonna go here.
They got chucked right out. There. That's where they are.
And it does again. It's like the transitional places. Like the one place that has the hardest ones is Stormheim to High Mountain.
Really? Because I think that like riding up the mountain there, it's actually a pretty smooth transition because you're riding up the mountain trail.
But the mountain trail is itself the definition. You know you're going up into High Mountain because you're literally going up into High Mountain.
Yeah, like, and I like that. I think it's kind of like a gradual sort of, you leave behind the lower level scenery, and as you go up, all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's colder up here. Oh, there's snow up here. Oh, look, there's like Torin up here, you know?
There's a world quest where you actually have to stop the Stormheim Valkyr from Rykul from attacking.
Yeah.
Like there's actually a quest where you're like, they're straight up, the Torn are like, no, you can't come up here.
Yeah.
And that's to me, like that place where that quest is the real border between the two zones.
Yeah.
And that zone's but that quest is actually deep in High Mountain. It's not in Stormheim. It's not even really close to Stormheim. You can ride for another 3-4 minutes before you hit Stormheim. I like that the zone transition has give and take, that it's not just, okay, you are now in High Mountain. Although you felt like you were in High Mountain just, you know, quite a while ago, but now you absolutely are, because the Torn will not let you up from this point.
I think we're kind of getting off into tangents here, though, and maybe we should get to emails.
Okay.
I like those conversations, though.
Me
sometimes.
Too.
Sometimes we got to talk about what we want to talk about.
Well, at any rate, as we always do the emails, please send your emails to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. It's really helpful if you put in the header of the email which show it's for. A lot of people did this week, so thank you for that, by the way. It's very helpful. And as always the case, if you can keep them short, that's cool. It helps us quite a bit. We have one possible long letter this week that we might get to or we might not. But in general, it is helpful if you can kind of cut it down.
We've been rambling a lot today. I don't know how many of these we're going to get to. may have to carry some over to next week. So
let's jump to them.
Yep. Okay, so our first email doesn't actually have a name attached to it, unfortunately, but they say, "Hello, Alex, Anne, and Rossi. I play a female dwarf shaman, and I've been thinking about the relationship between shaman and the Black Dragonflight. We know that the Black Dragons, under the Earthwarder Neltharion, were charged with dominion over the Earth, and that this proximity to deep places allowed the old gods to more easily corrupt Neltharion. I have two questions about this. First up, do you think shaman are more susceptible to old god corruption because of this? Secondly, what exactly does dominion over the earth mean for black dragons? Blue dragons are masters of the arcane. Bronze dragons can manipulate time. Were black dragons masters of the elements or earth magic? I love listening to all of you every week, especially because your personalities are very different and complementary." That is such a nice way to say that, wow, y'all argue with each other a lot. So thank
you. Now,
to
prove it, here's my answer on this question.
Well, I was going to say, for question number two, dominion over the earth, they shaped the earth. They like burrowed out caverns and things like that. They were
there's a really cool bit in the Cataclysm art book.
Yeah, talk about that.
They talk about before he went crazy, Deathwing used to deliberately create earth features to maximize peace between different groups on Azeroth. He'd keep trolls and elves from fighting subtly. He'd keep the Valkyr and the Vrykul up north.
I'm going to put a mountain range between these guys.
He deliberately did that kind of stuff. That was the kind of thing the Black Dragons did when he was, you know, when he was still, you know, Neltharion. And when he went crazy, the Night Elves call him Zaxxas, not because of what he did during the war, you know, the War of the Ancients. They call him Zaxxas because he deliberately lowered those barriers and put people into contact so they would fight. That's his revenge. So that when you say dominion over the earth, they're not kidding. Like, he can control the earth. He can make mountain ranges come up and go down. Like, that wasn't a joke. He was sincerely powerful.
And note, like, the aesthetics of Deathwing in particular, but a lot of Black Dragons, it really evokes a volcano. He has power over the mountains, and the volcano is like the rage of the mountain. He's dripping lava. It's the explosive, violent version of what he was.
Yeah, and there's lots of them that have names that imply like obsidian or onyx, you know, black earth rock, you know, actual elements. So it wasn't a joke. They weren't for sure. They had straight up control over the ground. Given enough time, they could do things like make mountain ranges come up and go down. And Deathwing had the most of this. He was the aspect. Like most red dragons, like they love life and honor it, but it was, you know, it wasn't all of them that could control it. It was Alexstrasza. Alexstrasza was the one that could literally control life. And in such
the
same way.
She made things grow.
Yeah, and in much the same way, Deathwing could control the earth. He wasn't kidding.
I do think there is some like overlap between the aspects. Like Alexstrasza is like makes things grow and so forth, but so does Ysera.
Yeah.
And Ysera is also kind of like linked into like earth and soil, and even though she's like the dreamer, it's like they all had some overlap.
For Alexstrasza and Malygos both had magic in a way, and so did Ysera have magic in a way, but Malygos was the magic god.
He was the absolute.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then again, if you're talking about time magic, then you're talking about Nosdormu. So there is obvious back and forth between them. And Nosdormu and the Bronze Drakes definitely seem to have some kind of control over at least sand, because it's thematic to time, and thus that puts them into kind of conflict with.
Yeah, and when you're dealing with time versus earth, like, can time like accelerate erosion and conquer earth and so forth. It's not like there's no hard lines, things, I think.
But as for whether or not shamans are more susceptible to old god corruption because of this, kind of, but only because of not because of the earth thing, because all elementals are uniquely vulnerable to the old gods.
Yeah.
The old gods know binding magics that can control elementals. Shaman tend to deal with elementals. So if you're a shaman and you're trying to control elementals that are corrupted, there's going to be some dangerous exposure going on. Plus, you can, like, if you remember Siege of Orgrimmar, the reason that Thrall got his butt handed to him when he went up against Garrosh was because Garrosh had basically had his evil shaman spend weeks torturing the elements for miles around him. If you're a shaman and you're like trying to draw on the power of the elements, and the old gods and their corruption has completely driven the elements crazy, you don't have any power now.
Yeah, and just from, you know, some of the aesthetic choices they made in Cataclysm, it was very much about the elements. And the Twilight's Hammer had lots of like dark shaman. It seems right up their alley to deal with that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so our next email is from Neru, a level 110 combat rogue in Kirin Tor, US, who says, "Hello, Blizzard Watch podcast crew. Now, this has been on my mind since doing most of the Paladin class haul. Some might consider this Paladin and Priest spoilers." Yeah, I don't know. I looked over the email. I don't really think at this point that it's that much of a spoiler. And they say, "But my question is, who are the canon leaders of each order? I ask this because during a quest for the Paladin class hall campaign, it's directly stated that Velen is the high priest of the priest order and not a stand-in for a player. Who do you all think are the canon leaders?"
I think Velen is a stand-in for the player. Like, I think if that was a priest in that situation, Velen wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
As having played through the priest class hall, not the paladin one, if there was like an NPC, if you're eliminating the factor of the player supposedly being in charge, if you just completely eliminate that, on the priest side, it seems like Alonsus Fowl is the one in charge.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, he pulls you into the Order. He knows Valen and some of the other people in the class hall are powerful people, but he's the one who you're talking to. He's the one who asks Valen to do this thing. Once Valen has a vision, it's Alonsus Fowl sending people to task, like, we need this, we need X, Y, and Z to prevent Valen's vision from happening. Alonsus Fowl is the guy that's in charge in the priest hall for sure.
Yeah, saying he's the high priest doesn't mean he's in charge. It means he's the high priest. High priest could very well be like the guy who does whatever sermoning they do. For that matter, I know
he's just one of the top guys.
If you do the paladin one, it's Grace and Shadowbreaker, I would say.
Yeah.
Or if it's not him, then it's the other guy, and I can't remember the other guy.
No, I'd say Grayson.
I don't remember his name either. I know who you're talking about. The guy who you actually work for.
Maxwell Tyrosius.
Yes, Tyrosius. Right.
It's either Tyrosius or it's Shadowbreaker. Because between the two of them, they either tell you all the stuff that needs to get done or send you all the places you need to go. But I tend to think of the people who, the class hall order leader types, I kind of think of them more as like, it's hard to explain. The way Tyrion was quote-unquote in charge of the Argent Dawn, but he didn't do anything. We're the opposite. We do everything. We go out and do stuff. We're not the stay-back leader types. We're the, okay, I'm going to go out and kill everything now leader
types. We're the active leader rather than the one that's sitting back ordering the armies around. I mean, we do some ordering because obviously we've got like the whole missions and things like that, and we have like our group of dudes that we send out to do special stuff, yeah. But it's not... We're not it's sitting like there the just having other people do things.
It's the difference between, like, the people who are 100% in charge are not necessarily the military people and vice versa. And we are definitely, like, the military people. We are fighting the war. We are commanding the troops and so forth. But the person more qualified to do the administrative stuff, like in the priest's case, Alonsus Fowl, is not necessarily the person who should be doing the military stuff. There's different roles people play.
Well, Anne's playing a shaman more than the rest of us. I haven't even leveled my shaman yet. Who would you say it is for the shamans?
When I was thinking about that, as I was going over like the priest stuff and the paladin stuff, and I can't think of anybody in the shaman class hall who has like, who feels like they have more power over the next person.
I was going to say Nobundo just because Nobundo seems to be the one everybody goes to when they have a problem.
No, because Nobundo, he follows you. He ends up being one of your followers, but...
You're in charge, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but
Lots of followers have been doing that for priests,
He does send you on a lot of things. Like, Nobundo does have, like, a pretty active role in getting you out there and getting you to take care of stuff. But he's not... I wouldn't call him... like, the leader. I never really got that impression. Whereas, in the Druid class hall, Remulos. And then the guy who's there with Remulos, whose name I forget, those two are very obviously, they're kind of like in charge. And then you get to be in charge later, but it still feels like they're in charge.
In the Warrior Hall, I don't feel like I'm in charge of anything.
No, you just show up to hang out and drink.
Like, Odin invited me to like fight stuff for him, and I'm clearly doing stuff for him, but I don't feel like I'm in charge of anything.
See, I kind of do. Like, once you did the warrior class thing and you end up with, like, all those guys doing what you tell them to do, it does feel to me like I'm in charge. Like, once the Keepers of Alduar are my backup band, then,
but it's
King
Imran is one of my followers, and I had to, like, persuade Odin to let me bring this guy on board.
Yeah, well, I would definitely say that it's Odin's house, but I happen to be using it. So you could argue Odin's, like, the top leader guy, and you're, like, the commander in charge of the general of the armies.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, that's the situation. Like, it feels like Odin is absolutely in charge. Like, yeah, I'm a really cool fighter, and he appreciates that I can fight stuff real good, but I'm not in charge of anything. Odin's in charge.
Whereas the Death Knight one, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything for the Death Knight campaign, but they make you Death Lord fairly quickly, and it's like... I actually feel like Mograine literally sighs in relief and steps to the side and is now he's your Jarvis.
Okay, it's your problem now.
This is your problem, dude.
Great, you can have it. Just take it. Take all of it.
You handle this. I don't even want to think about having to be in charge of this. And stuff happens later on, but I'm not going to talk about it. But I do feel like I can't say for other classes because I haven't played them. Like, I have no idea who you'd say runs the Hunter Order. I mean, it should be Chandra's Feathermoon, but I have no idea who it is. I'm always going to say it. I'm always going to find a way to work Chandra's in, so there you go.
Yeah, the Hunter Hall so far with Hattie, I honestly haven't gotten that whole impression of, oh, there's one really clear leader here. there isn't. There's the one gal who like brought you in and she's like, here, we're part of the unseen path and da 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 da. And she sends you on the quest to go get your other. I think a lot of the times it feels like that person who is sending you to go get your other artifact weapons, it's that person.
Yeah, rogues have a council, and even like your artifacts quests are all given to you by different people on that.
Yeah,
council.
There's like you get them from different people on the council, so it doesn't feel like there's one clear leader or anything.
From what little I did of the rogue stuff on the beta, right. It felt to me like rogues have like not only the council thing, you're just the public face of it.
Yeah,
you're the rogue kinda. That all the other rogues want to like. They shove you out, and like you're like, oh yeah, we're doing stuff. Yeah,
they'll pin the blame on you.
Jorok Ravenholt sits at the head of the table, so maybe he's the head of the council, but there's still a council.
And Ravenholt is like, it's a big name as far as rogues are concerned, so he would stand out, like fairly obviously he stands out, but even then he doesn't really act as the leader. And for the shaman class hall, that's, I think, the reason why I don't feel like the shaman class hall has that direct leader is because the person that you get those quests from is Agra. And she's not even in the class hall. She's like up above. You have to go out over to like where she's overlooking the maelstrom to go see her. She's not like actively in the class hall doing things. Whereas like the druid class hall, Remulos he's dead center. He's like in the middle of everything.
Warlocks, you are definitely in charge. Like there's no question. The guy who was in charge is like, I'm a big screw up. You have to salvage this. And you do. And like the guy you get most, like the guy you get a lot of your quests from is one of those like treasure goblins. He's not in charge. So you're Warlock Hall. It's definitely all about you and you pulling this situation back together.
Okay. Well, next,
I think that's all the ones we've played. I haven't played Mage.
Yeah. I haven't really I haven't done every class yet. Do I intend to? Maybe eventually, but not immediately.
I've done Warrior, Death Knight, Paladin, and Demon Hunter to lesser extents, and so.
Okay. So our next email is from Grum, who's on Ysera, US, who says, "Hello, Watchers. So I was recently doing the Light's Heart quest on my Warlock alt. During the final battle with Rakish, my two champions show up, and Velen says, 'This is awkward.' Even better, when I brought Zera's core back to my demon-infested order hall, my archivist had a line of dialogue asking if I was pranking him and wondering why such a holy relic would be stored in the heart of evil and darkness in the universe. That last one actually had me laughing out loud. Anyway, my question is this. Have you come across any similar funny moments so far in Legion? Do you think that Blizzard has finally realized they should stop reusing the same old tired jokes? After all, Harrison Jones hasn't made an appearance, and I've only found one or two poop quests. Love the show and all you do for the Blizzard community. Keep up the tremendous work. Grum."
Well,
does this happen, Alex? Is this a thing?
I haven't done that at my Warlock yet, so I don't know.
Oh, you need to go do it.
There's, like, I mentioned King Ymiron before and how Odin didn't want that, and excuse my language, but when you say, hey, can I bring Ymiron on board, Odin's basically like, that asshole? Why?
Yes, he does. It's actually really funny. He's like, no, he's terrible. Why would I do that? And you're like, because he's terrible, and now he'll be our slave forever.
And you're basically like, yeah, he is a big jerk, but wouldn't you love to send him on missions and do whatever you want for the rest of time? And Odin's like, hey, that sounds hilarious. Bring him on. Because Odin's a big jerk, too.
Yeah, Odin loves to be a jerk. I will say this, because we've talked about it before, and this is one of my favorite things. The ravens in Stormheim?
Yes.
That don't like night elves?
It's night elves. We talked about this before, and I said they don't like my druid for some reason. And it's not just my druid. It's every night elf. If you're a night elf, they don't like you.
And I was basically, someone had asked about it in the queue today, so I went and took a screenshot of my character standing next to them, because the whole time I'm standing there, they caw derisively, they shuffle around looking at me suspiciously. They don't like night elves. And it's hilarious to me. They're real open about it. Let me think what else. There is actually quite a lot of stuff. Like, the Dalaran NPCs, like, and not just Dalaran, NPCs in general will react to your artifact in various ways.
Yes.
Depending on what artifact it is, what class you are. The Death Knight axe, people in Dalaran are just like, is that thing grinning at me? Every time that happens, I laugh. I don't know. I think that's funny.
I don't know if it happens to other classes, but one of those reactions to Dalaran actually really irritates me. If you are a paladin with Ashbringer, Applebaugh will throw apples into your bag. It's like, dude, stop putting apples in my bags. I don't want your apples. These are like level one characters. What do I do with this? I have to throw it away now or eat it or something. Stop.
Look, he's just trying to be nice.
I don't want your freaking apples. Like, they don't they grow on him? Am I not eating him if I eat that?
He just wants to bond, Alex.
He, like, ripped his hair out and put it on a plate for me to eat. Stop.
If his hair is made of food.
The Shaman class hall is full of all kinds of NPCs and characters, but I think my favorite, you get him when you go get the restoration class artifact weapon, and that would be Grash. And Grash is a sea giant, and he doesn't talk so good, but he's hysterical. So after you finish getting the artifact, he shows up in your garrison, or not your garrison, your order hall. He shows up in your order hall along with the Pandarin gal that was with you, and she's trying to teach him how to do the panda dance. Like, they actually have like this little vignette thing going in there where she's teaching him how to do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and he's like, Grash learned panda dance. He talks like the Hulk. It's so funny. And then the Druid class hall. I mean, you got Myloon in the Druid class hall, which is fun enough. But then you've also got Brightwing in the Druid class hall. And Brightwing has you do a bunch of quests. And she's just as creepy as she is in Heroes of the Storm. So I love that, too.
I don't know if this is supposed to be humor or what it's supposed to be, but one of the warlock followers is a Worgen warlock, and he doesn't talk. Like, he makes like mumbly noises or just like ellipses when he's supposed to have dialogue. And if you look at him, he actually has like a metal muzzle on his face.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like, they locked a muzzle on this guy. So it's like, did he try eating somebody?
What was he saying that they did that to him?
It's like, did they not want him to talk? Or were they afraid this Worgen was going to start eating them? But yeah, he has like a Deathwing jaw kind of thing covering his mouth. So he can't talk because he's locked in like an iron mask. I don't know if that's supposed to be humor or creepy or what it's supposed to be, but it's kind of messed up.
Have you noticed anything else, Rossi?
Well, no, because the Warrior Class Hall doesn't have a lot of... It's got a lot of Raikul NPCs. The person that teleports you, every so often she says things like, "Someday I will come for you."
Oh.
It's like, thanks. That's helping with the morale, lady. Thanks. That helps.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. So our next email is from an anonymous lore walker who says, "Salutations, watchers. I used to play WoW back in the Kata early mist days, but I haven't touched it since. I still love the world and lore, and listening to the podcast has really gotten the old itch fired up again. After all my friends quit playing, though, I swore off subscription-based gaming for good, I thought. Everyone gushes about how good Legion is. Is it really worth it to come back after all this time? Thanks for keeping this lost spirit entertained, anonymous lore walker." Yes.
I might
be biased. I don't know.
Here's my caveat. Like, if you pulled out of WoW in subscription gaming because you have like addiction concerns, which are legitimate concerns, if you're that kind of person and you feel like your life is better without WoW in it,
don't come back.
Stick by that. Like,
yeah.
If you think life has improved because you aren't playing WoW X number of hours a day or a week, don't play it. Don't even tempt yourself. Like, you're out, stay out. If you're okay with that and you can temper yourself and you want to play WoW again, play it. Legion's fun. Legion's good. Is it going to be good forever? I don't know. For now, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff to do. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll say this much. Mists was one of my favorite expansions. I really enjoyed Mists of Pandaria. And honestly, I have to say that I think Legion has done a much better job of organizing non-dungeon, non-raid content for you to do. Like, there are days I don't do anything but world quests, and I'm happy with it. I don't feel like I'm, oh god, I have to grind rep. Oh god, I have to go to this place and do all their daily quests. I just look at the world quest map, pick a places I want to go there and do stuff, and I'm fine with it. It's fun. And more importantly, it is a rep grind. I am grinding rep, but I'm doing whatever I feel like. You know what I mean? There's a big difference. I don't even know how to put it into words exactly. It's the difference from feeling constrained and the difference of feeling like it's in my hands. This has been probably the best tiered version of Endgame I've ever seen, where you can do, like, I'm doing normal mode raiding, probably going to start doing heroics once we get normal down,
and I'm doing world quests, and that's basically what I do. I don't do a lot of dungeons. I don't do mythic dungeons. I don't do LFR, and I'm not doing mythic raiding. I'm just doing the stuff I just said, and that's all I need to do. And I'm feeling like rewarded. I get stuff, and I'm not feeling stagnant or trapped in anything.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I haven't done a lot of. I've certainly done some dungeons. I haven't done any raiding. I mostly do world quests and dungeons. But because of how gear works, if I wanted to jump into a dungeon or I wanted to jump into a mythic raid, I'm already geared for it just from the content I'm doing, just because of how endgame works now. I don't know my eye level. I could check it right now because I'm in game for the live stream. I'm item level 853. So it's pretty much good enough to jump into whatever I want whenever I want, but I haven't done raids at all yet. And I've just done what I've wanted to do, and I'm fine.
I think the difference for me between the two is that, I don't know, for whatever reason, Mists of Pandaria, when I hit endgame in Mists of Pandaria, it was like you have to grind all of these different reps to get stuff. And in order to grind this one rep over here, you have to grind this other rep over here. So it was like just chaining dailies every day. And that didn't feel good. It feels like they relaxed that somehow. And they didn't really, because it's still the same thing. It's like you've got a set amount of quests that you can do, and they're kind of scattered all over the place. But I think the difference is you can pick and choose. I don't feel obligated to do all of them. I don't feel like I'm missing out if I don't do all of them. You know what I mean? And I don't know whether that's because my approach to the game has changed over the years, or it's just all in the presentation. Because there's so many quests scattered all over the map. There's no way you could possibly do them all, but I don't really feel obligated to do them all either. I just pick the ones that I want to do and call it good, you know?
If you really want to do them all, you totally can. I've done it. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
Why would you, though? I mean, I like doing, you know, I will log on because I'm playing pretty casually right now. I'm not doing any raiding or anything. But I log on. I look at what's available. I pick the things that I'm really interested in doing. And right now, I got to tell you, it's all Suramar for the most part. I love Suramar so much. But I pick the things that I want to do. And then as soon as I feel like I'm starting to get a little bored or something, I'll either look and see if there's a different quest that I want to go do, or I'll just stop for the day and I'm done. And I don't feel like I'm missing out. That whole feeling of, you know, constantly feeling like you're going to miss out on something if you don't do everything, it's gone. It's just not there anymore.
Yeah, and the gearing is also something that you mentioned. If you've played in previous expansions, if you play especially in Cataclysm,
yeah,
gearing is a lot more flexible. And
way more flexible.
To a degree, I mean, you will not get the best gear outside of raiding. Even if your eye level is equivalent, you won't get stuff with set bonuses. You won't get the best looking stuff. But because everyone has an artifact, because you don't actually have to get weapon drops, you just have to get relics. There's a lot of, you know, you still feel pretty cool and you still look pretty good. Like the quest gear actually looks pretty good. At least the plate does.
The quest gear looks good. And then LFR, they changed it so that the stuff that drops in LFR, it does look like the tier sets. It's just a different coloration, which I appreciate. But like, Warlords of Draenor feels so far removed from anything else I've ever played in game. It's like Warlords is kind of receding to this bad dream that I'm not really thinking about anymore. You know what I mean? Because the Warlords leveling experience was really good, but once you hit endgame, it was just this crawl of nothing. And
even the little things of Warlords, like you mentioned, you know, LFR gets tier sets.
Yeah.
Well, when they introduced LFR, it was like that. It's just in Warlords, they decided to change their mind and give you ugly garbage.
They changed it, and it didn't really, it felt really kind of terrible. It's like, oh, I'm being punished because I don't want to join a raiding guild or whatever. Well, it wasn't that you were being punished or anything, and I wouldn't have minded if they had had the different look, if that different look had actually looked decent.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I look at the Hellfire Citadel LFR set that I had, and it's got that helmet that just looks like some weird conquistador glued two helmets together and is wearing them like a clam on his face. Yeah,
it wasn't pretty. And I like doing, you know, I like getting pretty stuff. So like everything in Legion right now is just, the leveling experience is fantastic, and you don't have to. I have yet to feel rushed to do any. The only time where I felt rushed was when Alex was yelling at me because I hadn't gone to Suramar yet. But that's okay. He had a legit reason to yell at me because Suramar is great. I'm so glad I'm there now. I think it's worth coming back. But
yeah, our consensus seems to everyone here is saying it's worth coming back.
Yeah. So. If you had reasons for quitting, you know, stand by those reasons. But if you're just looking for something fun to do, yeah, it's Legion's fun.
If you're looking for something fun to do, yeah, it's totally worth the subscription fee. I'm cool with it. And besides that, nowadays you can pay for your subscription with gold. So
yep.
If you've got a stockpile sitting there from Cataclysm and Mists, hey, cool, you can cash in on that, buy yourself some tokens, and you won't have to pay a subscription. So there you go. I think that pretty much wraps us up for emails, though, because we are kind of running over on time just a little bit. So Blizzard Watch. It's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast, site, and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Anne. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you guys very much for being here, and we'll see you next week.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage of the French Open begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.